Stand by. Transmitting sound. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hello and welcome to the show. We are in full-on holiday mode as we get you some advice on how to handle your office Christmas party and family functions as I chat with etiquette expert Sue Fox. Personal trainer Nadia Lawand also stops by to give us some tips on how to safely get your mind and body through the holiday season without going buck wild. Gina Lee of The Love Zone is here, and I also chime in on an offensive article targeting two dancers from the New York City Ballet's Nutcracker cast. Lots to do. Let's go.
Capture your need for sound.
As we march through the holiday season, there are so many functions and events to attend, whether they are work or family related, and things can get tense and stressful because we're all feeling rushed and overtired. To help us understand how to handle these commitments properly for our mental well-being is author and etiquette expert Sue Fox. Sue, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly.
Sue, if we can start off with workplace functions, because those seem to be what sort of comes up first in the holiday season, I guess my first question has to be, is it a must that you attend your office Christmas party?
I always believe it's a good idea. If you're uncomfortable in those settings, just make an appearance. You don't have to stay long, but make sure that your supervisor, your boss sees you and be somewhat sociable and mingle a little bit. But I do, especially in this day and age of our economy and trying to keep your job, I think it's important. It makes it look like that you're a team player. And it's good to get to know other people. And you may meet someone from another department, and it would be helpful in the future. So, yes, I really think it's important to attend and behave yourself, and of course, don't drink too much.
Yeah, well, that was my next.
Appropriately.
Yeah, well, that was my next question because, you know, you often hear these office, you know, Christmas party horror stories where someone decided to get tipsy and things went awkward. How do you handle that if it's not you that's done it, but let's say, you know, a coworker has gotten tipsy and God forbid they I don't know, try to hit on you or something?
Well, if you're with someone, I would always talk to, if you're attending the event with someone, talk to the person you're with, that if one of these situations come up, would they just sort of help you out of it? But the best way is be as discreet as possible. If someone is hitting on you and has too much to drink, maybe someone else, you could talk to someone else after, and maybe they could go suggest that he or she take a cab home. But, you know, just be as polite as possible, unless it's something really terrible that they do or say, but just excuse yourself in the situation. Just say, I'm going to go get some water, go get a drink, and just walk away from the situation. I mean, etiquette is about making others feel comfortable and using common sense. It isn't really about, you don't have to take any kind of verbal abuse or embarrassing situation. So just walk away.
How do you handle yourself, Sue, you know, when you go back to work? Because, you know, potentially maybe this person doesn't even remember that they've done that. Do you just pretend it didn't happen and go on?
It really depends on what exactly happened or the situation. I mean, if it was very serious or you feel it was serious, and they said something inappropriate, you might confront them and talk to them, and it would be horrible if they didn't remember. But, I mean, that's the main reason that you want to really be appropriate at these events, because you don't ever want to embarrass yourself or be the laughingstock of the office the next day. So go ahead and say something. If you think it was just a flirting and something fairly innocent, I just wouldn't acknowledge it.
Okay. And I kind of don't even want to bring this up, but what happens if, for example, you know, a boss or a person of power either, you know, again, hits on you or something, just, you know, because I've been to events where the boss has gotten a little bit, you know, out of his tree. How do you handle that if it's a person of power, Sue?
I think if it's serious, again, I would, if you think it would affect your job and it was inappropriate behavior directed at you, definitely report it to your supervisor, your boss. If it is your boss, go to Human Resources. I think sometimes these things need to be nipped in the bud. I mean, they probably wouldn't get fired, but they'd certainly, it's just a red flag. And if you don't say anything, I mean, it could continue. It's really up to you. I mean, you shouldn't be working in an environment that is hostile.
Okay.
And I truly believe in nipping it in the bud.
And just a question, Sue, as well, because, you know, I know that depending on which company you work for, some have amazing human resources, you know, departments. If you're in a place, though, where the human resources department is almost just a token, like, you know, like almost like your staff manager is the human resources, because I've worked at places like that, too. Is it scary, though? Because I know some people are afraid to go to that human resource because then they feel it's going to come back to haunt them in the future.
Well, you are protected by the law. And again, you shouldn't be afraid. We should never be working in a fearful environment. That would be even if it was a coworker. If you feel that, you know, you might lose your job, obviously that's illegal. But, you know, you don't want to have to go through lawsuits and all of that. But I mean, depending again on exactly what happened, you could maybe write a letter to your boss or the person that was offensive and just let them know how you feel about it and sort of see what the response is. But I still am a believer, and I don't think people, and I personally have been in situations like that through my work career years ago. And, you know, this day and age, it's not acceptable. I would say 15, 20 years ago, it was much worse, but you know, again, if you're fearful of losing your job, I think it's a risk you need to take, even if it's a small company.
Joining us on the show this week is etiquette expert and author of Etiquette for Dummies and Business Etiquette for Dummies, Sue Fox, www.etiquettesurvival.com. Sue, I actually have a specific question for you from someone that I know. They wanted me to ask you this question. I'm going to let her remain sort of anonymous right now, but she's been invited to a work function, you know, the office Christmas party. And she works for a relatively large banking company. And their party, obviously, as you can imagine, is very, you know, it's pretty out there. It's pretty, they have a lot of budget for the party. So they've actually inflicted a dress code for all of their employees to sort of show up to in this specific dress code. And she is not comfortable with what they've asked the women to wear. The women are not allowed to wear pants. The women are supposed to be showing up in either a black or a white ball gown. She doesn't feel comfortable in this, and she really doesn't know how to get around it without basically upsetting the managers. And she knows she needs to be there because she is, you know, a mid-level management, like, personnel. What should she be doing?
Boy, that's a tough one. I don't believe that they can require women to wear ball gowns. The black and white thing, if it's a black and white ball, that sort of thing, but they should be allowed to wear pants. I mean, that just is totally inappropriate, and I'm really kind of surprised that she would be asked this. And I think she should speak with someone. If they've already announced it and they're getting back from the employees, that probably will take care of it. But there's a risk that people won't show up for those requirements. You know, it's one thing if you have a company policy and you do have dress codes and you know that when you're hired. But I think for an event, you can say, yes, it's a black and white ball, but you should be able to be free to wear what you want. And it's a little bit discriminating, I would say, just asking the women to wear ball gowns. And also, there's an expense issue there. Maybe not everyone has one or can afford one. So I think if she is really uncomfortable with it, she needs to follow her gut and her conscience and do the right thing, which I think is ethical. And that's to tell them how they feel and that she thinks it's wrong.
Okay, excellent.
Inappropriate.
And with regards to office parties in general, Sue, do you sort of, you know, if they want you to be involved in, you know, because sometimes they want you to have sort of fun at the party and they create little games or whatever to demonstrate that you're a team player, should you be involved even if you are shy, or is it acceptable for you to just sort of sit that one out?
You know, I would say maybe try, you know, go a little bit out of the box and do something that maybe different for you, because you may have fun. But if it's a large group and people may not notice and you're not comfortable doing that, no, I don't think you need to feel obligated to participate.
Okay.
Then again, someone may see you and you may not look like a team player.
Okay.
So it's just that chance you need to take.
Okay, excellent. And also, you know, I know office parties either allow you to bring a spouse or sort of it's just the team. If a spouse is allowed, Sue, should you be bringing your spouse? Or because sometimes I feel like the spouse is left out because they don't really understand the office dynamic. And then you feel like you're trying to entertain. It's like bringing your spouse to your high school reunion, I think. But should you still bring them or not?
It's just personal. If you decide to do it, you know, speak to your spouse or your partner and see. One thing I think people attending these events need to remember is don't talk shop. I mean, it's really important. This is a social event. This is the time to get to know your coworkers, someone again in other departments, and talk about things of general interest. You can, you know, just look at your homepage and look at the daily news and find some topics that you can discuss that everybody could be a part of in these situations. And if you do decide to take your spouse, a partner, always introduce them, say a little bit about them, talk about what they do. Though, again, you're not there to just talk shop, but it's up to the person bringing the guest to make them feel comfortable.
Okay. And is there any other tips, Sue, that you need to sort of give out to us with regards to office parties? Just because I know there's many different levels of I guess, etiquette that involves you hanging out with your coworkers in a non-work setting.
Well, I just think that they are tense situations sometimes, and just try to be yourself. And once again, don't drink too much, even though it may make you feel like you're relaxed. But if there is a tense situation, it's best to always take the high road. You know, if someone in your organization maybe says something about politics or religion, just don't comment on it. Take the higher ground, and again, excuse yourself. You just don't want to participate in gossip or anything inappropriate. I think that's really key, because a lot of times these events are put on just so they can, upper echelon can look and see how the employees are interacting and getting along.
Joining us on the show today is etiquette expert and author of Etiquette for Dummies and Business Etiquette for Dummies, Sue Fox, www.etiquettesurvival.com. Sue, if we move over to family functions for a bit, you know, sort of during the holiday season, there are so many family functions that are going on. Is it okay to actually turn down some invitations if things are getting hectic, or are you risking hurting someone's feelings?
I think this is where honesty is the best policy, and you may have an issue of hurting someone's feelings. But if it is too much, and say you have small children, you know, family should understand. I mean, they may be hurt, but they'll get over it. I just think you need to do what's best for you. And then sort of the flip side of the coin is, you know, holidays just come, you know, a couple times a year. Just really try to do your best to attend as many as you can that's reasonable. Again, if you have small children and you're traveling, I mean, that really is a stressful situation. And I think most people are pretty understanding if you don't attend.
And, you know, even for the most sort of close-knit families, you know, tensions can arise around the holidays. You know, people are tired, they're stressed. And then if you add in that alcohol factor, which seems to really be the monkey's wrench, what sort of mental stance, I guess, if I can put it that way, should you take to sort of prepare yourself for, I don't want to say this, but like potential sort of arguments, awkward family moments, misunderstandings, like how do you mentally prepare yourself to deal with that?
This really depends on the person giving the event. I believe it's the responsibility of the host and hostess. First of all, if they know the family dynamics and they suspect something may happen, it's always the drunk uncle, and sometimes it's the drunk grandma. You never know, or someone says something hurtful. But I think the host or hostess, you need to really be organized, prepared. A lot of things you can do. You can make sure that that small children are accommodated. Maybe they have a special room set aside for them. Have help, delegate, keep people busy, have things for them to do. You know, if they're just not sitting around watching football and drinking, you know, have some games out and have people help you. Sort of have a team of your own family. If you know there is maybe one relative that would cause problems or you just can't make them happy, get another relative that is really maybe upbeat and has a sense of humor, and talk to them ahead of time and say, you know, could you just keep an eye on Steve tonight? And when those situations arise, again, just they are awkward, but just be discreet and try to ease the tension. Don't participate in it. Have someone change the subject if possible. You know, and of course, if they're drinking, have somebody managing and watching the bar so they don't overdrink or take the liquor away if it's a problem of alcohol. The host and hostess really should be the conductors and be prepared. And if they're happy and relaxed and laughing and calm, you know, most of the time the rest of the family kind of takes subconscious clues from you. And, you know, chances are that they'll be relaxed and calm also. An example is my son just came to visit for Thanksgiving and brought a new girlfriend, and he's pretty type A and busy and hyper. And I love this gal. She has just an amazing calming effect on him. And I just really notice the difference in, you know, the energy people put out. If you're a hectic and racing around the house trying to get the food ready and do things. And, you know, people sense that anxiety and they can't be as calm and relaxed.
You brought up the alcohol situation, and it's not that I want to harp on it, but I do think it just seems that you know, whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas, even if it's a July 4th or July 1st barbecue, you know, alcohol always ends up playing a part. And, you know, I think a lot of families have people in there or family members that are either, you know, still struggling with alcohol problems or, you know, they are on the road to sobriety or, you know, if you are hosting a family function, for example, over the holidays that, you know, a member is attending who has found recent sobriety or even is sort of 2 years in, should you be supporting them and maybe not having alcohol at the party? Like, I just, because I feel like sometimes they're not supported and it's like it's up to them not to be left out or, like it's like they have to deal with it on their own.
Well, it's interesting because I think no family is immune from this. And yes, you do want to be supportive. If it's something very recent, say someone just got out of rehab or they just started attending an outpatient program or going to AA, yes, the family needs to be supportive. I mean, you can to this person ahead of time and ask them how they're feeling about it. They would probably say, yes, it's fine. Go ahead and serve alcohol. But I think, again, if it's a very recent situation, that family needs to pull together and you can go a day without having alcohol. Have some, you know, sparkling cider and some other non-alcoholic beverages that are festive and fun. I mean, you don't need to be drinking. And maybe having a nice bottle of wine at dinner is a little different than having cocktails all day long and beer available to everyone. So, yes, I think, you know, etiquette and caring about family is about having compassion and understanding, and I think it's really important to be supportive.
Okay. And a question, too, with regards to the fact that, you know, if an incident does happen at the family function and whether it's alcohol-related or not, how do you help, you know, sort of avoid that incident turning into a bigger mess that could carry on for months or years? Because I feel like, and I've, you know, I've heard from friends and colleagues that, you know, it always seems to be around the holidays where an incident happens and then that just sets the bar for months to come of that incident not going away. How do you avoid that?
It's sometimes impossible. If there's some deep-seated childhood things or something that came up in the past, it's inevitable that that person will bring it up or make some kind of sarcastic remark. And again, if who's ever hosting the event, you can't stop people from this, but, you know, you can be prepared ahead of time. And if it doesn't involve you and it's two other family members, it's really not your responsibility to work it out. Maybe if it was your children and a couple cousins, yes, I mean, follow up and make sure that it gets sorted out. If you, you know, if it's adults and you're not involved in this dispute or argument, there really isn't much to do. You could talk to them and say something about you're really sorry that this happened and you hope that they'll be able to, you know, speak to each other and remedy the problem and just get it in the past and forget it. And hopefully that will happen. But I do hear horror stories every year. You know, sometimes they turn into altercations and it's a very sad situation.
And Sue, you know, because this is supposed to be a joyous time of year, and I would, you know, want to stress that point that, you know, it's all supposed to be a joyous time of year. Is this the time, though, if there has been, let's say, some sort of incident that happened in the summer or months ago or maybe even 5 years ago, and let's say you are feeling, you know, that you really miss that person or, you know, because you're not really on close speaking terms, is this the time of year to try to mend fences because it is, you know, supposed to be a time of family or should this wait till after the holidays?
No, I don't think it matters when. I just think getting it resolved and reaching out and letting the person know, I mean, especially if they're not attending the family events because of a five-year-old argument. No, I think, yes, it is holiday time with families, and I think it's important, but any time of year you should try to patch things up and reach out. And, you know, you may not have the results that you'd like, but at least you reached out, and again, that's taking the higher ground. You always feel better about yourself when you're not the one that has left it undone and maybe said some bad things. You feel so much better once you apologize. That's why it's best not to get in those situations and try to bite your tongue and walk away from them, because you do always regret, you know, negative things that you say to someone else. It makes you feel terrible. Almost everyone admits that. And then you feel even worse having to pick up the phone and calling or sending an email and apologizing. But it's, you know, families, probably go through this all year through. It isn't just the holidays.
And so how important is it, you know, to, and again, it's I feel like it's a fine balance, but, you know, because kids pick up on things very easily, it seems, especially if they see that you're outwardly upset. How important is it for the family, again, I don't even want to put it this way, but almost like to put on a good face, you know, for the kids, because, and it's not that I want the kids to grow up in some sort of false expectation that the family's all great, but I mean, this is a time for kids. Like, I feel like the family needs to sort of put things behind, you know, and make sure the kids, A, have a good Christmas, and B, don't think that their family's a mess.
It's critical. I am coming from the side of you do put on a happy face. You do for that one day, few hours, is children look at you, you set an example. They are just little sponges. They see and absorb things all the time, so you parents have to set a good example. And it won't hurt for one day, and I don't think you're setting them up to not understand reality, because once they start in school and have situations at school, they'll know that arguments happen. But definitely, if you have small children or even, you know, grade school children, teenagers, you just don't want the arguing at all in front of them. It sets a bad example, and it does ruin the holidays for them.
Okay. Sue, thank you so much. You've been amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I was happy to do the interview.
Excellent. That is Sue Fox, etiquette expert and author of Etiquette for Dummies and Business Etiquette for Dummies. Again, check her out, www.etiquettesurvival.com.
Go wrong.
Oh no,
this is our family jewel.
We are family.
The Love Zone
with Gina Lee
on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Welcome to The Love Zone. I'm Gina Lee. Sometimes I wonder if I'm naive when it comes to love. All the advice I give and hope I have, the belief I have in love, are they just the romantic musings of someone who's seen too many rom-coms and read too many novels with happily ever after endings? As I write words of faith and trust, of working to make relationships work, a little bitter voice cackles in the far reaches of my mind, asking, do you really believe all that you say? Is there really such a thing as happily ever after? When I witness the pain some of my friends have gone through in the name of love, lies, abuse, neglect, even when I recall my own horror stories, what the heck do I have to be so enthusiastic about? Am I leading folks astray by saying finding the one and keeping them can be done? Is there a reality I'm not aware of in which love does not conquer all? What do I personally have to show to say that it does? When you're not sure of the direction you're going in, whether you're suited for the path you've taken in life, I've found the best way to get perspective is to imagine yourself at the extreme opposite of your current position. So at this point of feeling self-doubt, I've decided to entertain for a moment how my life would be if I dropped those rose-colored glasses and took everything with quite a few grains of salt. First, I would stop believing in the concept of love and view relationship partners as nothing more than parasites. I would keep to myself, never going on dates or engaging in any interaction that was not strictly platonic. I would keep my heart fiercely guarded, never letting anyone in. To do that effectively, I would have to make sure I didn't share anything remotely personal or emotional, as that would make me vulnerable. No one could hurt me, take advantage of me, fool me. I'd be wise now, because after all, love is just a myth, a flower that fails to bloom. Since I'd no longer believe in love and the possibility of sharing my life with a so-called soulmate, I would just focus on the more intellectual aspects of life, living in my head, not my heart. Sheesh, I don't want to live like that. But you know what? A lot of us have decided to. We've given up. We've seen and experienced too many love gone wrong stories to believe in love ever going right. We've withdrawn from the dance because we're tired of having our feet stepped on. But as you sit on the sidelines, does that make you feel better? Safer? Well, may at first, but not for long. It's okay to take a break from the love arena when your heart gets weary. It's important to have that time to reflect and recharge. But to forego love altogether is to deny yourself an important element of life itself. You can't love only yourself and not anyone else, just as you can't love anyone else without loving yourself. You'll only stunt your own growth if you disrupt the balance of that equation. One builds on the other, and to build anything takes work. You just can't escape it. And it's not meant to be all heartache, or else what's the point? Everyone deserves to love and to be loved. I am by no means a therapist, an expert, or guru. I'm just a woman who's not afraid to love or to believe in the power that love has to transform and enrich lives. A big part of experiencing love is believing in it. And if you have people in your life who believe in it too, then that's enough to keep you from being totally jaded and bitter. My life has been so much better when there's love in it. And even though there are times when I feel frustrated and pessimistic about relationships, I couldn't see myself being able to live with the alternative. So, if believing in love is wrong, I don't want to be right.
I'm Sid Stevens of Sun Youth in Montreal. Thank you for supporting The Kelly Alexander Show as they raised a collection of non-perishable food items for Sun Youth's annual Christmas basket drive. We appreciate your support and spirit of giving this holiday season.
We are in full-on holiday season, and this means lots of office parties as well as family and friend gatherings. And what this can mean is that your exercise routine and eating regimen can go down the tubes. To help keep us in check is our good friend and personal trainer, Nadia Lawan. Nadia, thanks for dropping by the show.
No problem. Thanks, Kelly.
So, Nadia, as we march through this holiday season, we have, you know, tons of work functions to attend as well as family parties. With regards to work parties, where oftentimes I find, and I think this is probably the case for a lot of people, the food selection is in that sort of buffet style where there's, you know, lots of finger foods and naughty treats. What does this mean?
Well, first of all, we all love the naughty treats, and which means don't deprive yourself. My rule, my biggest rule, rule number one is moderation. And this is something I always live by. It doesn't mean you have to deprive yourself. You can have those treats, those naughty, yummy treats. You just need to have it in moderation. So don't overindulge in anything, but enjoy.
Okay. And I think you and I have talked about this before. I think because you and I have maybe done this before. When it is the night of the day of the office party, I think people sometimes choose the route of starving themselves, you know, throughout the day because they're like, ooh, I'm going to get this later, like this and this and that later. What is that idea? That's not good, right?
No, that's the worst idea. I mean, a lot of people, like you said, starve themselves all day thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to a party tonight, and this way I can eat a lot. Big mistake. You can't go to the party hungry. What you need to do is, first of all, have a good breakfast, like you usually would. Have a good lunch. And this way, you're going to avoid the overeating. You're going to be able to eat slowly, enjoy what you're eating like any other day. What happens when you starve yourself is that you become so hungry that you eat faster and you eat more, which puts on those extra pounds.
And like you said, have a good breakfast, have a good lunch. Should you like have some sort of snack, maybe like an hour or an hour and a half before the event, so that again makes you a little bit more wary of what you're eating?
Yeah, well, you know what? This is something I do regularly. I snack because I'm always keeping my system going. I'm never starving, which, you know, when you're starving, you're going to overeat. It's usually the case. And you eat so fast that you don't even realize you're full. So I would suggest having a little snack. It doesn't mean something big, you know, 50 to 100 calories, tiny little something to keep you going so that once you get to the party, you're not eating everything in sight.
And with regards to alcohol consumption at a work function, because usually it's either A, free bar, or B, you know, endless bottles of wine. How do we handle ourselves in that situation?
Alcohol is, you know, one of the biggest problems around this time of year. It's, like I said before, moderation is the key to all of this. But first of all, people don't realize how many calories are in alcohol. There's 7 calories per gram of alcohol. So I don't know if that means anything to people, but if you have like a mug of beer, that's around 150 calories. You know, white wine, 120. That doesn't sound that bad. But, at, you know, around this holiday time, we're having Bailey's and the Irish cream, margaritas. That's between 450 to 460 calories in one drink. One drink. So, you know, you're having your vodka cranberry. You think it's nothing. That's 250 calories. That's you could have had a full snack or something. So my suggestion is, maybe water down your drink a bit, you know, soda water. It doesn't have to be only alcohol. Put some ice cubes, drink it slowly, really enjoy it. I mean, this is a fun time of year. You don't have to gulp down all your drinks and then the next day be suffering because you had way too many calories in alcohol.
Should you go to a work function, and we're going to talk about, like I said, family parties in a second, but should you go, you know, to a work function with a plan? You know what I mean? Like knowing like, you know, I'm going to have one drink or maybe two if I'm there for 3 hours. And then, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, should you have an idea before you get there and then instead of going crazy nuts?
I definitely think you should go in with a plan because you'll leave so much more satisfied. And what happens a lot of times is if you don't go with a plan, you end up having a little bit more than you thought to drink. And then once you have those couple more drinks, you start having a couple more snacks because you're a little tipsy, and then that snowballs. And then by the end of the night, you've had way more than you expected, and you're trying to work it all off the next day. So yeah, go in with a plan. Say to yourself, I'm only going to have this many drinks, so pace yourself. Have some water in between each alcoholic drink. And then as for snacks, it goes for, you know, snacks and food, the same thing. Plan that you're only going to have this many things. What I usually do, my trick is to not go for the food right away. Take your time, talk to people, and, you know, take your time with that food. If you wait till other people are done, you're enjoying your food so much more because you haven't eaten everything and then see someone else want more, you know?
Okay. And with regards, I know it goes without saying that, you know, you need to be careful how much you drink at these office parties because, you know, no drinking and driving. But also I wanted you to touch on the fact too, Nadia, that, you know, if we go back to the whole idea of starving yourself before going to one of these functions and then having a drink. How bad is that?
Oh my gosh. Well, think about, you're putting alcohol in your system with nothing to absorb it. So you're asking for trouble at that point. You need to eat you need to eat, or else you're just going to be a little tipsy on the dance floor. You're going to be totally impaired. You're not going to know what you're eating. You're putting yourself in a situation to fail. So be prepared. You know, eat well, drink some, think of moderation, and you're not going to have a problem at these parties. It's honestly, holidays do not faze me, and they shouldn't faze anyone else. Why? Because if you eat in moderation, enjoy your alcohol in moderation, then you can have your cake and eat it too, right?
Mm-hmm. So another question that I would have, if we sort of swing things over to the family functions, and I don't know if it's because it's, you know, your family and your friends, I find that any sort of sense of right and wrong goes down the tubes. And it's like everyone, when they're going to their mama's house or whatever, is like, screw this. And they eat God knows what. And then, you know, it's like their whole way of being goes right down the tubes, even though let's say if they are a person who is normally on the ball, I find that, you know, come Christmas or whatever, like a major holiday, and this is a major holiday because you've got, you know, Christmas going on, you've got other celebrations going on, New Year's, it just seems like everything goes down the tubes when it comes to your family functions because it's like, hey, I'm with family.
Yeah, you're totally right. We don't want to let people down. You know, they made all this great food for us. It's one time a year. But it doesn't mean you have to let all of your, you know, healthy all year round go down the tubes. What you need to do is plan ahead, like we said before. Plan to only have a couple things. And if you feel peer pressured or family pressured because they made all this great food that you love, then say, I'd love to have a piece of this. Is it okay if I take a piece home with me? I know it sounds horrible, but if you're with family, they're going to be so touched by that you still want it, but you can't have it now because you've eaten too much. I mean, how great would that be to enjoy it the next day? Or what I like to do is share it with someone. If you really want to try something that your mom made, then share it with someone. Say, you know, do you mind? I'll have a little piece, or you have a little piece. And if that doesn't work for you, just have the little piece and throw the rest away. I know that sounds horrible, but it's better than being than overeating so much that you're going to be sick the next day.
Hanging out with us on the show is personal trainer Nadia Lawan. You can reach her fitnadia@gmail.com. Nadia, you know, a lot of us are just completely pressed for time during the holiday season, but this doesn't mean that you should abandon your workouts, right?
Oh my gosh, no. You know, no matter what, you never should abandon your workouts. We all get busy. I get so busy that I never, at some points I don't have time, but you always need to be moving, do something, whether it means, okay, at work, stand up and do some squats or lunges when no one's looking, or go for a brisk walk at lunch, whatever it is, keep moving. There's so much to do in the winter too, you know, snow, we've got the skiing, you go curling on the holidays. There's so many activities that will keep you going. And you cannot stop working out during the holidays. It's the worst time because we are having those little treats here and there. So you have to balance that out.
Now, some people I know, you know, especially if this is relatively new to their way of life, that they are, you know, on some sort of regime and they're taking better care of themselves, especially if they have had like a weight issue in the past, you know, but then again, temptation comes in during this holiday season. What do you say to people who, let's say, went a little crazy go nuts at some party, you know, they're feeling guilty, and then like the next 3 days, even though it's crazy holiday season, they've tried to like increase their workouts and you know, they're trying to make up for what they did on, you know, on Friday night. What do you say to those people?
Well, it is always balance in and out. You always have to kind of look at that. Whatever you're putting in your body, you have to balance that with exercise. So if you're going to go nuts, I mean, you don't want to go so nuts that you hurt yourself, but do keep in mind that whatever you do put in, if you don't want to pack those pounds on, you will have to work it out. So I don't think it's a horrible thing to work out during the holidays. What I usually do is on those days where I know I'm going to go to parties and enjoy, I do a little workout in the morning, maybe a little bit extra than usual, which is totally fine. We're not telling people to kill yourself, go overboard, overexercise, not at all. Do a little workout and you will definitely enjoy your parties more. And you'll probably watch what you're eating more because you worked so hard in the morning, or, you know, you worked hard exercising, that you don't want to ruin all of that.
Okay. Now, I think New Year's resolutions are the bane of our existence because, you know, you set such high standards and expectations, and then I think a lot of people fall flat on their face. What do you suggest to someone who, you know, wants to turn themselves around starting in January 2011?
Well, I mean, New Year's resolutions, like you said, they're a tough thing to get your head around because it's like that one time a year, there's so much pressure to succeed and all of that. We should have goals throughout the year. And so talking about goals, you should have some main rules when you come to those goals. They should be you have that rule of moderation that I always talk about. You have to balance the in and out. So whatever goals you have, make sure you realize that if you're eating a lot, you do have to exercise for that. Keep moving. Be realistic with them. If you're saying I want to lose 20 pounds in a month, that it's totally unrealistic. If you're saying I want to lose 20 pounds over this period of time, perfect. Now break it down into small steps. What do you need to do first? Well, how about 1 pound? 1 pound a week, or maybe even 1 pound every 2 weeks. Break it down into small steps so that they're completely realistic and doable. And once you've got that, find a buddy.
And with regards, Nadia, to, you know, because I think a lot of people use New Year's, you know, it's the beginning of the calendar year for a lot of us. I guess it gives this extra shot in the arm of like, you know, I'm starting in January, it's a new year, I'm going to take care of myself. If someone does decide, like you said, you know, to set a goal, you know, and we've seen it and you read about it and you see it on TV how like gym memberships go way crazy high in January and then they sort of fall off because no one's coming to the gym in February. What do you tell someone who, you know, again, wants to start off in January? And then, because inevitably, I guess my point is they are going to hit that time where there's a slump. Like, how do you get them through the slump, Nadia? Like, because there's like going to be a time when someone's like, oh my God, I don't think I can keep doing this.
Oh yeah, we definitely see that every January. Everyone comes to the gym, there's tons of people, and they've got all these goals, and everyone's got their New Year's resolutions in mind. And then they do drop out. So what do we tell people? We say, be realistic. Think about the next couple of months. Are you going to be able to work out 5 days a week? Are you going to be able to work out 6 days a week? Probably not. How many days are realistic in your life? And how much time are you going to commit? Because the worst thing you see is that, like you said, someone for 2 months is gung-ho, and they lose all this weight, and they do great, and they hit that slump, that I don't feel like doing this anymore. So make it realistic. If you know for the rest of your life you can fit in 2 to 3 workouts a week, then stick with that. And that way you're maintaining the rest of your life. You're not going to hit those slumps as much. It doesn't mean, I mean, every so often we get bored, we have to change up our workout, fine. But at least we won't be pushing ourselves way past a realistic goal for ourselves.
And, you know, as we do march into some very sort of, I know you said earlier that there is a lot of activities that can be done in the winter. I know for us here in Canada, the northern United States, you know, snow is a factor. But what do you say? Because I think a lot of people, even though there are, you know, the hardcore skiers and you know, other people that want to get out there skating, all that sort of good stuff, I think some people do sort of use the winter months. They just become more sedentary. What do you say to people as we try to march through January, February, March before, you know, you can sort of hit the pavement again?
Well, I definitely know the struggle, because when it's snowing outside, all you want to do is like cuddle up and mm-hmm. watch a movie or something. So what I try and tell people is try and incorporate a workout in there. And once you start moving, you'll get motivated to move more. So that could be while you're watching TV, get on your elliptical. Or if you don't have that, maybe do a couple sit-ups, push-ups in between commercials that will start to get you, you know, get that feeling in your head. And then progress from there. Maybe say, okay, well, during this show, I'm going to balance on a BOSU ball. Or I'm going to get my medicine ball and move around. Anything that you can do sitting there will get you off the couch. And then once you get off the couch, you'll say, okay, maybe I want to go for a walk today. So baby steps is the biggest thing to get off the couch in the winter, because it is a struggle and we can't deny that. So work with it.
And I know this is a question that's a little bit out in left field, but not entirely, because again, as we march through this holiday season and, you know, people are trying to buy gifts for one another, what is your take on, you know, these video games that try to incorporate, you know, exercise into them, like Wii Fit and all that sort of stuff? Is that something that you think would be either a good gift for yourself or for someone else?
I think anything that's going to get them off the couch is a great gift. As long as you're moving, it really doesn't matter what you're doing. A lot of people say, well, what kind of workout are you going to get looking at a screen working out? Well, you know what? You've just got those people off the couch and they're working out. So it doesn't matter what they're doing as long as they're moving. They could be throwing a ball against the wall, you know, as long as we're moving.
That's fantastic. Well, Nadia, thank you so much for your time. I always appreciate it. And I hope you join us again in a couple months.
Thank you very much, and happy festivities and eating.
Exactly. That's the way we roll.
In moderation.
I knew you were going to come back with that. That's personal trainer Nadia Lawan. Again, you can reach her fitnadia@gmail.com.
The Kelly Alexander Show wishes you and your family all the best at this special time of year.
So here's the deal as we continue to march through December on The Kelly Alexander Show. We're trying to keep things light. We're trying to keep things fun. But something has come to my attention that I really wanted to talk to you about because it really upsets me. And it regards body image and body size. And the deal is this. There is a bunch of media attention going on right now in New York City because of a New York Times dance critic, Alistair McCauley, who felt the need to personally attack two dancers from the New York City Ballet's Nutcracker performance, that specific team. And it's just, you know, it's supposed to be a holiday time of the year. And, you know, at the beginning of his column, he actually did focus on what he was supposed to be focusing on, which was the actual performance of the Nutcracker and that ballet company's sort of interpretation of the Nutcracker. But then out of left field at the end of his column, he decided to personally attack Jennifer Ringer and Jared Engel, a male and a female dancer, about their body size. And it was these two disparaging remarks that, again, had no bearing. And again, it's causing quite the media stir in New York City and actually sort of across the country because the Today Show actually covered it. And that's how it came to my attention. And I wasn't going to sort of bring it to you, but I thought that, you know what, throughout the year, we are supposed to be aware of things that are going on. And I think that body image and body size is something that is very important no matter what time of the year it is, because a lot of people struggle with their own body size, their body image, and just feeling good about themselves. And it's people like this guy right here, Alistair McCauley, who I think perpetuate the problem and continue to make the world, you know, not a happy place to be in if they keep sort of attacking people's body size. And I have to say that, you know, my hats are off to Jennifer and to Jared, because it seems that they are handling the situation very well. First of all, I want to actually read you the comments that Alistair McCauley said, again, dance critic for the New York Times. He goes, quote, "Jennifer Ringer, as the sugar plum fairy, looked as if she'd eaten one sugar plum too many. And Jared Engel, as the cavalier, seems to have been sampling half the sweet realm," end quote. And I don't know about you, but when I hear that or read that, it makes my blood boil. It's just so disappointing because obviously the New York City Ballet, they felt that both Jennifer and Jared could physically handle their respective roles that they're in, you know, both physically and mentally. And so I don't know why this Yahoo has any comments about their physical size. Now, I understand that as a dancer, basically your body is your instrument. I get that. But again, the ballet company felt that they could handle these roles. And from all accounts, they're doing very well in these roles. And I just don't understand, you know, was Alistair trying to be controversial? Was he trying to channel an older, you know, Perez Hilton type of manner of handling things? Because Perez Hilton isn't even this mean anymore. He's completely changed. And it's like Alistair is trying to be, you know, he's trying to gain attention maybe for himself. I don't know. He hasn't explained himself. To date, I don't believe he's issued any sort of statement to support what he said or to defend himself. As far as I know, he also hasn't issued an apology. And Jennifer Ringer was on the Today Show sort of explaining the situation. And I have to say, she is one amazing young woman. First of all, she doesn't even want an apology. She basically says that this is the opinion of one man and one man alone, or one person. She didn't even sort of, you know, categorize it as a gender thing. And it sounds like she's moving on. But, you know, there's a couple of things I want to mention about Jennifer. First of all, when you see her on television, she looks fantastic. I don't know what the heck this guy is talking about. I don't think she's over 120 pounds. And even if she was 200 pounds and the ballet company felt that she could handle this role, then there you go. That's as far as it needs to go. Second of all, Mr. McCauley was completely irresponsible in making these comments, especially towards her, let alone for, you know, what he said about Jared. But from what I understand, it's sort of well known in the dance community in New York. So McCauley should have known this as the dance critic for the New York Times, that Jennifer suffered eating disorders earlier in her career. As from what I understand, she's, you know, an anorexia survivor. And, you know, that comment that he made could have set her back. You know, it sounds like she's sort of old enough now to probably handle it and let it go. Again, she sounds like she's moving on. And I think she'll be just fine. But let's say this had been a bit of a younger dancer, and he said this. This could have been, you know, damaging to her health. You know, depending on what type of person would have heard this, this could have been detrimental to a human being's existence. You know, if they had got caught up in more anorexia or more bulimia. So, you know, as a dance critic, he has to know how prevalent eating disorders are in the dance community, and to sort of just. It's almost like he's encouraging it by his comments because they're so disrespectful and so irresponsible. You know, it could have an adverse effect on a dancer's psyche. So I'm furious about this. I'm sure you can tell in my voice that I'm very upset. I just can't understand how someone in that capacity, again, as a dance critic for the New York Times, by the way, would say something like this, completely disrespectful and irresponsible. And Alistair McCauley, first of all, I hope he issues an apology. Second of all, I'm also upset at the New York Times. I feel that they should be issuing an apology as well, because the New York Times, if you don't know, has a huge influence on the dance community in New York. A lot of what they say can potentially make or break a performance or a dance company's performance of whatever they're doing. And again, this just seems like complete just disrespect, lack of respect, and being irresponsible on both the part of the New York Times as well as Alistair McCauley. And I really feel that he should be reprimanded for this. So again, my apologies for being so sort of, I guess, up in arms and on my soapbox. But I just, I respect people too much to be challenged and disrespected over there. Body size and body image. We're all different parts of the quilt in the world, if you will, and we all bring something to the table. And this guy, you know, is just, he's absolutely ridiculous, because I have to say I did manage to see some of the video footage of Jennifer performing, and she's fantastic. She's a gorgeous ballerina and a very nice young lady. So my hat off to her, off to Jared Engel, the other dancer that was criticized. And my hope is that they will continue to go on and have fantastic careers.
Bring on the
remix.
Black Eyed Peas with The Time, the Dark Intensity remix, right here on The Kelly Alexander Show. You know what? I cannot believe another show is already done. A special thank you going out to my guests, Sue Fox and Nadia Lawan, not to mention the always amazing Gina Lee. I also want to take a minute to thank our listeners who came out to support our broadcast from Taz Basement in support of SunU's Christmas Basket campaign. Your generosity helped raise over $1,200 for Sun Youth this holiday season, which is just awesome. So thank you so much for that. I also want to take the time to thank the wonderful staff and management at Taz Basement for their support, as well as to Sun Youth Director or Executive Vice President Sid Stevens, also actor Benz Antoine and DJ Chris Perry, as well as my entire Kelly Alexander Show team, Esteban, Chris, Mario, Derek, and Sandra. So here's the deal. Make sure that you tune in next week, because it's going to be our special holiday Kelly Alexander Show, and we have lots of surprises for you. And one that I have to tell you about, the one and only Mummy Alexander is going to be by in full effect as she talks about her awesome holiday fruit salad. She's going to explain to you how to make that, give you the recipe, all that sort of good stuff, as well as her super yummy chicken salad sandwiches, which I have to tell you, all of the family fights over to get on Christmas morning. They are the bomb. She only makes them once a year. And it's like as if we haven't eaten for 6 years when we get them on Christmas morning. We're just battling for them. They're awesome. So she's going to give you that recipe as well. So have a great week. You and I will chat soon. Any comments or questions, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.